Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, Surviving the 21st Century, a look at health and nutrition in our modern world. Joining me in this quest for knowledge are my good friends, the research and writing team of Manny Barling and Ashley Brooks. It's great to talk to you both again.
Good morning, Simon.
Good morning, Simon.
And how is Southern Cal? Has it returned to its sunny and warm self?
Yeah, the Chamber of Commerce ordered up a beautiful week. It was in the 70s yesterday. We didn't even have to turn a heater on. It was 60 last night. We thought we were in the tropics or something compared to the last month.
Good Lord.
A day without a monsoon here is great.
Actually, it's been fairly wicked here in Mississippi. Today was actually the first day in a week that my favorite reading spot, my front porch, has been habitable.
Wow. Now, that's terrible when you can't sit in your front porch in the deep south and read. I mean, that's the end of the world.
It is. It has put me seriously behind schedule. And as always, our chat room is open. And if there are listeners with questions, we do invite you to ask them in there, and we will try and get to them. Manny, we've been running this program for quite some time. Each week we choose a topic, and yet we never quite seem to make it all the way through. You know, we just get so engrossed in one aspect. And I was hoping that today we might have a bit of a potpourri of a program and revisit some of the areas that we have talked about before, but that there's been more information, shall we say, that's come out. I know that this week you seem to have managed to capture the attention of the beef industry. Would you like to elaborate on that?
You mean how much they love us?
Well, you know, Simon, I feel like we were laboring in obscurity until the industry started reading our blogs, and they immediately started dispatching hit people. They took Andrew Weil, a noted doctor, to attack us on soil. Country Ranchers Association started attacking us on beef, and then we found they were attacking us on other things. So we wanted to take some of these straight up and dispel some of these myths. So we got this anonymous basically comment on one of our salt blogs on why people should eat organic salt. So we get this anonymous blog. And the blog is obviously from somebody in the industry because they're too articulate for the average person in terms of the technical stuff. And it, one of them says, the USDA's National Organic Program regulation specifically excludes salt from organic content. This means there's no such thing as organic salt. It's like, oh yeah, so God didn't make salt naturally. All of a sudden it was created in the last 20 years by somebody, but it's not organic. So
God's up there creating it in a lab is what they're saying.
Oh yeah, maybe God's a chemist, and he's, you know. I mean, this whole thing is absurd that everything that the industry says exists like this, genetically modified, all these other chemical changes, the MSGs, they act like it's natural. But
they fail to say, even though there's an anti-caking agent that has aluminum that causes Alzheimer's, it's really organic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Well, there's two things that bother me about it. First of all, we eat organic salt. And for those listeners who are interested, we suggest Brittany Sea Salt, Flirty Cell, and Brittany Sea Salt Coarse Gray Salt, which comes with a grinder. And as I said in my response to them, how can there be no organic salt? We're not only eating it, everybody around the world except the United States is eating organic salt. Are you saying there's no organic salt in France and Colombia where it's mined? I mean, what do you think they get out of the ocean? So they're saying the salt from the ocean that God puts into the ocean is not organic? And this is the kind of industry stuff that just drives me crazy. It's like, first of all, there's a tendency among them to basically deny God, and that's the way I look at it. If you say that only science can create something, then you're starting to fall into the arguments that so many Americans are making about so many other issues. It's about what nature provides for each one of us. And to get when we talk about the USDA, I have to raise a survey. There's a group called the Union of Concerned Scientists. It's almost like a union for these high-tech scientists who work for the FDA and for major corporations, and that's the only group who speaks out for them because they can't speak for themselves, so they get fired and blackballed. So in 2010, which incidentally was just last year, the nonpartisan group that supports unbiased science and government,
which is independent
totally
scientists.
Independent, right? They polled all the scientists and inspectors of the FDA and USDA responsible for food safety. These employees say they face political and corporate interference with their work. They surveyed more than 1,700 scientists and inspectors. I mean, we're not talking about 10 or 20. We're talking about 1,700. Almost half of those surveyed said that in the last year they experienced, quote, situations where corporate interests have forced a withdrawal or significant modification of an agency policy or action designed to protect consumers or public health. And what they're saying is the corporations are successful in getting them to withdraw actions that would protect the public or change them so they're diluted and they don't affect them. 45% said they had similar interference from the members of Congress. So our own elected officials who are being paid by lobbyists, supported, and political contributions of Big Food are interfering with the USDA and the protection of consumers on the food that you eat every day because it's politically expedient and they're paid to do it. And 54% said the FDA and USDA DA gave political interests and Congress too much weight in the decision-making process. I mean, basically what we're saying, they're admitting, the scientists of the FDA and USDA, is corrupted by the political influences of Big Food. They're corrupted by the actions of members of Congress. So while I, you, and all our listeners are voting, that person we vote for is taking lobbyist money from the drug companies and food companies, and they're taking political donations from them, and they're making decisions that favor them after we voted for them to protect us. And every time I see a post like that where they say, oh, the FDA is protecting the public, we're not doing anything wrong, I want to throw up because I don't think any of us trust our government right now. I don't think they make good decisions for Americans. And here we are with an industry saying, oh, trust the government that we're financing. So to make it worse, a gentleman who's a director of the Scientific Integrity Program says, quote, what we found is that action is needed to curtail interference in science, both political and that driven by the private sector. We have two different agencies giving very identical responses, and this suggests the need for a broad reform. How polite is that? Why don't we just get up and say, these guys are taking money and they're not in our best interest and they're not doing us the right thing for us. And I'll give you an example. The same industry people sit as have political friends or even members on independent organizations like Scientific Advisory Board of the Center for Science of the Public Interest. Boy, that's an important group, but it's inhabited by people from Monsanto, Mars, Hershey's, all these, the Kraft, Kellogg, all these people are powerful enough to determine who sits on these boards. Several boards of the medical schools, including Harvard, Tufts University, all of these people have members of the board from the food and drug companies. They're basically well-educated and well-paid foxes in the public hen house. And it gets us to a point where who can we trust? Well, you know, I was on a channel that handles primarily Christian broadcasting, and I said something the other day that stuck in my mind, too, and I said, who would you rather trust? Nature and God, who's put this food on our table for a couple million years, or these big corporations who have scientists that are basically working for 20 years for them to make money?
And when they're asked, Manny, they will say they don't believe in God.
Right.
Many of them say,
yeah,
I don't believe in God.
And I tell you, if I have a choice of what God puts through on the table through traditional farmers and what big corporations put on my table through a Frankenstein-type lab, I think Americans should take what God puts on their table. What do you think, Simon?
I totally agree with you. I want to go back to a group that you mentioned earlier, ranchingcountry.com, I believe, is the website. It's a private site, and I like to dig around because, well, you know, that's what I do. And
and you do it well.
Now, even the domain registration information is hidden. They've got it hidden behind one of the, anonymous companies that specializes in doing just that.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, it appears to be out of Santa Monica, California, believe it or not.
And it's run by a public relations agency. I told you I was able to independently, since I practiced law in Santa Monica for 30-odd years, my son represents a great number of the major groups in Santa Monica. It wasn't hard to run them down. They're an industry group. They're a lobbyist group. They run this website for confidential information among people in the industry, ranchers, cattlemen, et cetera. And basically, they're the source of a lot of items that come up on our blogs that are comments. And I want to switch to one that I love. One of the issues in our new book, It's Not Your Fault, is whether weight gain, obesity, and food addiction is caused by chemicals or it's basically a behavioral issue. So we get this post on one of our blogs and says, this generation is becoming obese because of overeating, lack of exercise, and being off the farm. What do you mean being off the farm?
Come on.
This generation was born in urban cities doing hip-hop and certainly not interested in living on the farm. This isn't the 1920s when 43% of our nation lived on the farm. I think we're down to 8%. And so they go on to write, it's not becoming obese due to factory farm meats. And they go on, because our blog is about how genetically modified corn affects factory farmed animals so badly, which we'll come back to in a few minutes.
And we also cover it with scientific data. I mean, we have heavy data in our books.
We'll get to the data. Then the little post goes on and says, corn is grass. Cattle are genetically programmed to eat grasses. And I go, what do you mean, eat grass? I mean,
this is one of the industry people, right, Manny?
Of course it is. It's, you know, there's Bermuda grass, there's other common grass you put on the lawn. Marijuana's grass, but corn's not grass. It is a cereal grain like wheat and barley. And for someone in the industry to write this kind of nonsense saying that corn is grass shows the lengths they'll go to lie and deceive people. And it gets even funnier. They go on to say that animals and factory farms are not force-fed anything. Go see Food Inc. Go look at King Corn. Go look at all the photos. As I pointed out to one guy, wrote a comment, there are over 300,000 images on the Internet of cattle being force-fed in these ugly pens that we complain about in a book.
And it's not even – it's the force-feeding is bad enough, but to force-feed them food that is highly toxic that actually kills them within 130 to 140 days.
Well, we'll get to all the technical stuff in a couple of minutes.
He's on a roll.
Forgive me.
Well, no, it's not the roll. I want to get we have a primary picture, and we'll get into sciences. Then they go on to say the diets are formulated by nutritionists to gradually induce high-energy grains to avoid acidosis. Now, this is gets to what Ashley said. First of all, they're not diets formulated. If you're only feeding something genetically modified corn, tell me that's a diet. That's not a diet. Formulated by a nutritionist, a deaf, dumb, blind, mute with a dartboard could formulate a diet that has only one food in it, and it doesn't matter whether that food is beef, genetically modified corn, sugar. If you're only eating one thing, that's not a nutritionist diet. And when they talk about high-energy grains, well, I thought corn was grass. Are they feeding them grass or are they feeding them grains? And this is the kind of nonsense that we get posted on our blogs. And then they go, oh, I believe you're confusing RBGH, which is steroids for cows and cattle.
Synthetic.
And synthetically done by Monsanto. and growth promotants used in beef production. What do you mean confusing? They shoot up cows and they shoot up cattle with steroids. And that, I wrote an article that inflamed everybody saying basically, I guess the title of it is, and I haven't looked at it in a little while, so I can't recite it by heart, but the basic title of it is, here we go, do you know that your child is drinking milk containing hormones and steroids that make a cow look like Arnold Schwarzenegger in the Terminator film? So imagine these guys like weightlifters shooting up on steroids and then feeding them genetically modified corn, and that's the cattle you eat and that's the milk you drink. They talk about how RGBH is used to increase milk production. Oh, boy. Isn't that wonderful? So your milk is being increased by steroids. Oh, my God. Why don't I take a bite out of Arnold Schwarzenegger in his prime?
Well, especially since it causes pus in the milk.
Yeah. So here we have a nation who talks about, oh, athletes shouldn't take steroids. Athletes who take steroids shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. Barry Bonds is on trial for taking steroids. Rafael Palmeiro, Mark McGwire, a host of others aren't being put in the Baseball Hall of Fame because they took steroids.
Okay, but the argument would be,
but you're going to eat cattle with steroids in it and drink milk from cows with steroids in it. Now, how silly is that for the industry to say?
Actually, the one thing I've noticed is how the industry wonks have responded to some of the things that the three of us have written.
Well, Simon, they're paid to do this.
Right, but the first wave of wonks were the pseudo-scientific wonks, you know, the Dr.
Oh,
Soy
yeah.
Wheel type people, but that seems to have died down, and now we have the you know, grassroots I'm a cattle rancher wonk,
which they're not.
Have you noticed that subtle change?
Yeah, it's subtle like a hammer. And they write really stupid things. I'm looking at one of the ones that, like, in the same wonk from the cattle industry talking about our hamburger article. One of them says, as far as the USDA zero tolerance goes, you definitely fall off the turnip truck, because they're claiming it says if the FDA doesn't inspect meat, how would you know that they have a recall? What do you mean? Yeah, as I pointed out to him, one of the things that came out like in the egg recall is the FDA and USDA don't even have a staff. They weren't even inspecting these egg farms, and when they did, they told them we're in violation of the dozens of rules and never followed it up. So everybody in the industry says to you, oh, my God, the FDA and USDA protects you. And then another one he writes is, if a sick animal is slaughtered, it is not up to the factory farm but the responsibility of the USDA plant inspector. Oh, wonderful.
This is the same thing that you started with, Ramey,
right.
And USDA. Okay.
Right.
Let's
get real about it. Does any American or do any of our listeners want to trust a government inspector to protect them? I wouldn't trust these guys with a dead dog.
Only because they're afraid of losing their jobs, too. It's about jobs. They'll lose their job, right, Manny, if they actually come out and say the truth about it.
So they go out and they see something wrong in a factory farm. They go back to their boss, who was a former employee of Monsanto, you know, DuPont, any one of the big food companies, and go, I believe that there's something wrong with this farm. They're eating genetically modified food. The cattle are getting sick. They're dying. What do we do about it? What's the guy say? I don't know. I'll call my former employer and ask. I mean, how do you go to your department head when he's a political appointee from the very foxes that are attacking us and ask him how to guard the hen house? You can't.
And this is not about American health. I mean, what we're talking about is we have to guard our health, and what they're talking about is, hey, it's all about the money. I mean, it's a two different sides of the sword there, and that's a bad sword.
Well, let's get into the fun one now. Another one writes, there's no difference between GMO corn and your everyday garden variety corn to a cow's stomach. Right.
Right.
I don't want to tell you there's no difference between rat poison and the hamburgers I eat. Well, and okay, if they're GMO, that might be true, but that's just nonsense. And again, if you look, and I always bring attention to Food Inc., which is an Oscar-nominated film from last year, a documentary. It isn't that they were guessing. They're showing these cows. They have a big hole in the side with a rubber piece and saw inserted, and here's a veterinary talking to the camera, being interviewed, going, oh, yeah, these guys get acidosis, and the corn turns this, and it infects them. So, and the guy's sticking his arm, elbow deep into this cow's stomach.
And they become sick of E. coli.
And he's fishing out the genetically modified corn so it doesn't make the cow sick. So if you're feeding something and sticking your hand in its stomach to pull the food out so it doesn't kill them, what greater statement is it than the GMO corn is deadly to the animals? So what did the industry write? Oh, there's no difference. And they say the same thing about sugar. One of the things we complain about in our book is that the sugar is genetically modified, and you need to eat organic sugar. Well, most Americans don't know that most of the sugar in the United States comes from sugar beets. If it's from cane sugar, like California, Hawaiian, the CNH brand, it says pure cane sugar from Hawaii. The other sugars we like, turbinado and the rest of them, say pure cane sugar from the Caribbean. But the rest of the sugar you buy, this is sugar. And that's not regular sugar. It comes from sugar beets. So how are sugar beets grown? They're genetically modified sugar beets. So, Simon, tell us about it. You discovered, Ashley had sent you some litigation in California. So you're new to this the last 3 or 4 months, and you really got knee-deep into it. What was your reaction when you saw that a federal court stopped them from growing genetically modified sugar beets in violation of a court order? As an American citizen, what did you see about that?
Oh, I read the initial article, and then I checked the links and located the Monsanto response. Of course, it would have to be Monsanto. Horrified, absolutely horrified, particularly by the arrogance that Monsanto is showing. The basic case revolves around several hundred acres of farmland in the San Francisco area that Monsanto are using to create a breeding stock, if you will, of sugar beets that are genetically modified. And they were specifically told not to do this. The judge has ordered the destruction of the crop. Monsanto come back with such arrogance, pointing out that 95%, and they're bragging, 95% of all sugar beet production in the U.S. is GMO, from GMO seeds. You know, this judge doesn't know what he's talking about, and we're going to set him straight. And you know what? They probably will, because they've got enough clout that this circuit judge, he doesn't matter.
Well, I'm going to interject one thing. This is California, and we get a lot of criticism around the nation about things about California, but there's one thing I'll tell you about California. The judges are not easily affected here. They don't, you know, this is where Hollywood and all the big industry is. At one time, California had the fourth highest gross in the world. We would have been the fourth largest nation in the world if we had separated from the United States. And the people here are a little smarter than the average bear, and they don't buy into that as quickly as the Midwestern courts that are more tuned to corporate America.
Well, factory farming is banned right now, right? In 2012, we banned it here in California.
Well,
we voted against it.
Well, not factory farming. Well, we voted, yes, factory farming of meats. All the things we discussed, the illegal pens and the poor treatment of animals that we eat. And my biggest complaint with poor treatment of animals is I don't want to eat an abused animal.
A sick animal. Because we're sick because of the abuse.
Well, in California, we passed a law that starting the next year, 2012, January, they cannot pen up chickens and do that kind of thing. So the food in California is going to improve dramatically because it can't be factory farmed.
Which further goes on, Manny, about the comments on the blogs that these people are making. If it didn't exist, which this is the argument of the industry honks from these, you know, big corporations, big food, then why would we be voting against it? It's illogical that it's being banned in our state.
Well, no, the point is that human beings, when given a choice between something genetically modified and the real deal, as I say, that God puts on the table from farming, we know what their choice will always be. It'll be the natural food. And I'm sorry, we accidentally interrupted you, and I didn't intend to do that. I'm sorry, Simon.
Oh, not at all. But I do want to get, you know, your thoughts, because my thoughts are that Monsanto are just going to raise the stakes here, and eventually they'll take this to a level where if that ruling will be overturned.
Well, it could be, and one of the reasons is one of Monsanto's former attorneys is Justice Clarence Thomas, who voted in genetically modified foods as a separate organism and allowed them to be patented.
Wait a second, repeat that. The justice guy worked for Monsanto.
And he did not disqualify himself when he was on the Supreme Court from a case involving a former client, which in my former profession as a lawyer is considered a conflict of interest. But he basically didn't do it.
How can that stick then, Manny? Can't they go back and...
It's the highest court in the land and you can't change it. My point, though, goes a little bit differently. My point is that Monsanto's arrogance is in part based by the fact they feel they have the ability to control the Supreme Court through Clarence Thomas. And that is the ultimate arrogance, is when you're capable of appointing a justice to the Supreme Court who will follow your bidding. And I'll tell you, Clarence Thomas, who among lawyers is considered one of the worst Supreme Court justices in the history of our land, is basically supports his former employers on every single issue. And that is a danger to Americans.
And there's no turning back.
Isn't Clarence the one that discovered a pubic hair in his Coca-Cola?
Yeah, no, I think he's the one who discovered Anita Harris. Hills.
I can't believe you did that slip on tongue there. Wow.
Yeah, I did. Slipped on that one. Oops, sorry. But, I have no feeling for Clarence Thomas until I read his opinions. And as a lawyer, when I read his opinions, I go, oh, my God, he didn't really say that. It's hard to believe this guy went to law school sometimes. He's so poisoned by his industry beliefs.
Well, it means that he hasn't read, because if you've read anything about genetically engineered or read anything about the genetically modified or what's being created in a lab and what's happening scientifically, there's no way you could ever vote any of that stuff in. You can't.
I disagree, honey. He was their lawyer, and you've been around the practice for a long time.
It's who's paying your check.
It's who's paying. But not only that, lawyers know what their clients do and not do. And as a lawyer, I must tell you, it's a daily battle sometimes with certain types of clients about your feelings about their conduct. And I don't know that Clarence Thomas ever bothered to have feelings about what they did. But, yes, whatever is going on with genetically modified foods, Clarence Thomas knows the truth.
You know,
anyway.
One of the things, getting back to your thing about the judges with the beets, and the judge order you said about with the beets, Simon, was how I found it interesting that Paul Ashtoff of the Earth Justice remarked that the USDA thumbed its nose at the judicial system and the public for allowing this crop to be grown without any environmental review. What was never mentioned is USDA did this. Their whole focus is on environmental law as opposed to the human being who is getting sick. Beets are a vital thing that has been around for centuries and centuries. It's an anti-cancer. It's a filters through the. It helps to clean out the liver. It's essential for kidneys. It's a vital food. It's so vital that it actually there's organic ones that come in jars that people take daily medicinally. It's been given out medicinally. Hippocrates used it. I mean, it's like this is a major medicine that is flawed now by making it genetically engineered. So that issue for me was one of the most important issues. And people with diabetes, oh my gosh, here they are thinking they're taking something good, they're having a beet, and that beet is genetically engineered. It's like the other food. It's damning. They will get sick on it.
Yeah, so basically what we're talking about is the largest single supply of sugar that Americans eat, and we have a corporation who's arrogantly saying, we know more about this than you do, which is that same paternal governmental issue that we're all complaining about. I don't need a government to tell me what's good for me. I'm not stupid. I know what I should eat and not eat. I know what the rest of it. And on one hand, all these conservatives I listen to say, we have too much government intervention. You're right. We have the government intervening in our food source on behalf of major corporations. We don't need that either. So that's some of the concerns. So go back to you, Simon.
Right. That actually brings up a story that, Ashley, I think you mentioned it a couple of months ago, milk and the whole food store or health store.
In Venice, here in California.
Yeah, in Venice, California. Do you want to just bring us up to speed again on what that story was all about?
Oh, sure. The sheriffs came in, guns ablaze, as that article said, and they went into the Venice health food store, which was organic, and they were selling raw milk. And they went in and guns ablazing, removing all their milk and their yogurt. It was with these poor, you know, vegans shaking in the store. I mean, overtaking their milk.
Yeah, can you imagine? You're into health, you're into your everything, other part of your life, and you go to a little health food store because you prefer raw milk that you probably drank as a child. We had Jessup Farms here in Los Angeles, and we used to buy our milk from the farm when I was a kid.
Raw tested milk. They test their milk.
Right.
It's not like it's like thrown out of the cow.
So to make first of all, in the history of the world, raw milk existed until the last, 100 years. So to make a long story short, here we go with the government intervening on behalf of corporations. Because why are they putting out of business? Because the factory farms don't want this stuff sold. Because although I don't drink milk, it is very clear to me that that form of milk tastes far superior than what's sold every day in the stores. Because I must tell you that once you have some kind of real milk, this genetically modified or affected milk is horrible. And Ashley, explain to them what they give the dairy cows, the RGBH, et cetera, and the antibiotics. Can you do that?
Sure. It starts off with the fact that they take a DNA, which, again, everybody knows from CSI what DNA is. They take a little cell, and they clear that cell out, and the beginning cell is from an E. coli. And then they create this RGBH in the lab. And then they create it, and that becomes this hormone that they make into it's medicine. It's synthetic medicine that they then give to the cattle. You said it goes into the feed too, Manny, right? And it's given to the cattle, and it causes mastocytosis, which is pus in the milk. And the RBGH, of course, you're going to have, they have to give antibiotics because it makes the cattle so sick. It's banned in Canada. It's banned in countless areas of Europe. It's banned in a lot of countries throughout the world because it's so toxic that it makes the animals sick. So, and here in America, okay, this is all legal. We're going to keep this RBGH in our cattle and ban raw milk. What's the problem there? And then in the meantime, they're feeding the cattle more genetically engineered corn to keep the cattle. That's their feed, which then that's taken from a BT toxin, which that's the beginning of that DNA cell, which grows into corn, and you've got pesticides and this toxin, and it causes a bacteria that's so highly toxic to the cattle, and it also is toxic to individuals, to human beings. So they then have to give antibiotics that then is passed on to the humans in the milk. So you've got pus in the milk, you've got antibiotics in the milk, you have synthetic hormone, you have a synthetic corn that's going into the milk. And then the government says, this was nervy to me, 90% is removed in pasteurization. Where does that 10% go of all these synthetics? And 10% of what? 10% of a drop? 10% of a cup? 10% of a half a cup? Where is that measurement on there? But what I love right now is that, and now when I'm picking things up in the market, I'm seeing in California, especially in Trader Joe's and Whole Foods, where they are clearly marking no RBGH. So people can argue, oh, this is really safe, but then I go, wait a minute, why is this on the label then?
Well, let's tell an interesting story on that, Simon. We've talked about this before in other shows. They tried to have that banned in country and states. So to avoid you having a choice, their choice was to
the label you're talking about.
To ban the label that says no RGBH, because after all, there's no problem at all with RGBH. So, believe it or not, most cities and states rejected it, except, oddly enough, Pennsylvania. And what happened in Pennsylvania is the industry-oriented head of agriculture, I forgot his exact title, decided to pass it and to make that law. And he was slammed by the governor, said, no, you're not going to do this. So they, after trying and trying everywhere they could, they finally found one state that would pass this law, Ohio, which all of us were like, I'm never shocked when Ohio does anything like that. But the fact is that it really was surprising to most people. So they challenged the law in Ohio. So who supported the industry? The FDA and USDA. So finally it got to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals said, no way we're going to strike down this label. And they wrote a long appeal saying basically the FDA is wrong. There's a difference between this and regular milk. And who are they kidding and whose side are they on? And basically lambasted them for this kind of conduct. So here we have, as we talk about whose side is the USDA on, in the case of putting this synthetic hormones into the cows, they're on the side of the industry.
And I'd like to get back to something, if I can, Manny, that I left out, was on November 26, 2010, there was a victory against Monsanto milk. And in that, it said there is a significant difference between RBGH milk and non-RBGH milk. For the past 17 years, the FDA has held on to their initial findings that there's no significant difference. Then they listed here, hormone-treated milk is different from non-treated milk because it contains increased levels of hormone IGF-1, which promotes cancer tumors. This is according to Dr. Epstein. Excess levels of RGF-1 have been incriminated as a major cause of breast, colon, and prostate cancer.
And this is an expert that responded to the courts.
Wow.
That one, and as he goes on to say, they're inducing a natural period of milk production during a cow's negative energy phase. And it goes on about the pus in the milk, and so things are beginning to change, and these corporate bullies such as Monsanto, no matter how many honks they have comments on our stuff, Manny, they're, you know, enough people are out there in the awareness, and as long as we keep the awareness out there, we can all get healthy.
Yeah, and the point of this show is don't believe what the industry tells you, which many wise Americans already don't believe them. But the fact is they're willing to say and do anything
Oh, here it goes on more, Manny. Contamination of the milk with illegal antibiotics and drugs used to treat mastocytosis and other RGBH induces disease. Increased concentration of the thyroid hormone enzyme, thyroxin F, is found in this milk. Increased concentration of long chain to decreased concentration of short chain fatty acids. A reduction in levels of the milk protein casein. I mean, this goes on and on within this article.
It seems to me that about the only thing not in milk anymore is milk.
And Simon, one of the things when I was talking to a friend of mine in Youngstown, Ohio, I had said to her, I was telling her this because she drinks a lot of milk, and I was informing her about, you know, being cautious with it. And I said, you know, my favorite of the organic butter was Sierra Nevada. And she said, geez, I hadn't thought about milk and butter. And I said, how about cheeses? She said, I hadn't thought about cheese. Cottage cheese is something women eat a lot of. I eat a lot of it. I used to eat a lot of it until now. I'm eating organic because I don't want the stuff that causes breast cancer. I mean, with the stats being 1 in 8 women are going to have breast cancer, where do people think it's coming from? It's in the food.
It's awful. Manny, you talked about California banning factory farming, or at least to a certain extent. I'm sure the industry would respond with, hey, look, there's 300 million people in the U.S. They all need food. What are we going to do? You know, is there a solution to factory farming?
Well, first of all, factory farming does not produce more food than simple traditional organic farming. I hear that all the time. There are surveys by the University of Wisconsin, who's a pretty conservative university, and the University of Arkansas that prove that in reality they have to spray more pesticides on factory farm vegetables and fruits than they do in traditional ones, and that the cost of factory farmed fruits and vegetables is higher than the organic cost. Even though they're selling them for more money in the stores, the fact is it costs farmers much more. For one thing, these poor farmers have to pay outrageous fees to Monsanto every year for seeds because their seeds are supposedly sterile. But even though they're contaminating fields around the country, they claim they're sterile and they have to rebuy them. So the fact is that we could produce enough food to do that. So their next argument is, oh, all the starving countries in the world need this, and we're doing the food because we need to feed other nations. Well, the truth is, that other nations reject genetically modified food. I told tell a story about Zambia. The American government tried to give Zambia genetically modified wheat and other things, and they refused to take it because what happens is the genetically modified foods kill the caterpillars in Zambia, which are basically used for protein.
They would bite into it and it'd split the gut of the caterpillar open, so you can imagine what this food does to human beings.
Well, it does the same thing, but not so radically. The fact is that the bacteria from these products get into your stomach, they stay in your stomach, and they lead to things like Crohn's disease and other problems that Americans are experiencing. So the fact is that it just doesn't go with the animals and the insects and the other people. It translates to humans. Because I guarantee you, if there's residues that affect animals, they're affecting humans. None of us can escape any of that. And in fact, one of the reasons they use like laboratory rats to test is because they're very close to humans, and humans have much the same reaction as rats do. And as a point of interest, when you see these tests that are done on monkeys, monkeys do not react, even though we're very similar, to the same tests that human beings do, which is why they use the rats, which incidentally are fattened up on MSG. So the fact is we aren't going to feed the world's population because they won't accept it. India and other countries are waking up to the reality and banning it. So in the end, the only fools who are going to be eating this stuff are Americans who aren't standing up for their rights.
The only because
I just want to touch on something that you said, Monsanto said. You know, their seeds are sterile. Now, I can't remember the exact set of circumstances, but didn't Monsanto take a farmer to court? And I believe they won. The his crop had become infected by a GMO crop from somewhere else. You know, the wind had blown the pollen or whatever, and he discovered that he had this brand new crop that seemed to be a lot more resilient to weed killer. So started to use it as a seed source. Do you remember that story?
Well, actually, he didn't really start to use it as a seed source. It just sort of happened to him, and I'm not so sure when I read the case of Monsanto didn't discover it quicker than he did, because they have their own little Monsanto Gestapo police force that just, you know, goes through the Midwest and Canada looking for potential violators.
With guns.
They
threaten people.
Yeah, there's huge stories. If you research this on the internet and you look up Monsanto private investigators and GMO seeds, you'll come up with all these articles about how they sued, I think, over 200, it's really over 200 farmers, I believe is the number. It's a huge number. And how
the lawsuits and volume, like you said, Manny, are volumes worth of store, of, you know, warehouses. I mean, these people have lawsuits all over the world.
And let's, oh yeah, that's my joke, is they'd fill up several warehouses with their litigation. They sue everybody. But more interestingly, when you take a look at what goes on in places like Indiana and Arkansas, because this happened in Indiana, seed trading is a tradition in this world. It's been going back for, you know, millenniums. Farmers trade seed. You know, farmer A has got a miraculous crop. I had a great crop, grew over 300 pounds of tomatoes last year. You know, and if I look at the few seeds that came out were worth a fortune, because they have, it's a tremendous crop. So one farmer goes to farmer B, or let's say they lose a crop. They may borrow seed from other people. It's part of the makeup and history of our country. Well, they've been putting seed trading groups out. Guys who have these old-fashioned separators that separate the seed out of the leftovers after they've picked these various things like corn and separated the seed, they try to put every one of them out of business. So they were,
and have succeeded with many.
Yeah, so they're trying to wipe out seed trading and natural seeds, so one day they dominate the world and they have the only seeds that are available.
And they're coming close, Manny.
Well, I don't know if they're coming close. They're meeting severe resistance, because the longer this goes on, the more people are starting to wake up, thanks to a food revolution, a revolution of which we feel we're a part of.
But this goes back to the point I was trying to make. The seeds are not sterile.
No, of course not. In fact, there's a well-known scientist. His name is Amrit Pushtai. At the Rowett University, at the University of Edinburgh. We've told this story before, how he published a very learned scientific article on how these really weren't sterile, and they were spreading and they were contaminating other crops. So Monsanto went crazy, donated $250,000 to the university, and the university recalled this science and said it was flawed science and pulled his report. Well, it infuriated a lot of people. So 22 of the world's most famous scientists duplicated his study and proved he was right. 22 of them, not one or two, but 22.
Wasn't he also responsible with the potato or the...
The potatoes too, but then the bigger issue comes. It infuriated the London Times. And you know, Simon, from your heritage as a British citizen, when the London Times gets upset, they get upset. So they did a serious investigation, and they were the ones who caught Monsanto bribing the Rowett Institute and the University of Edinburgh with his $250,000 to pull it, and caught them red-handed and published a long series of articles and exposés about Monsanto's dishonest conduct in Europe. And that same year, and every year afterwards, Corporate Watch and other groups in Europe that watch these actions by major American corporations voted Monsanto the world's foremost corporate criminal. Boy, who wants to be called that? What do you have to do in this world for every major group to call you the world's foremost corporate criminal and rename you things like Monsatan? You know?
Right, from Greenpeace. Greenpeace calls him Monsatan.
And a variety of other groups have these horrendous names for them because of their conduct is much as you described earlier. They don't give a damn about you and I. They don't care if we die young. All they care about is their profits. And because of their political might, they now have over 14,000 biotech patents. And at one time, they got President Quayle in the 90s to stand up before Congress and talk about how we're in a biotech world and we're going to support these biotech companies and it's freedom from regulation and we're ready to go. And since then, and even Clinton, I'm not going to absolve Clinton, and even right now under Obama, he's doing nothing to stop the genetically modified foods because they are so politically powerful. To do otherwise means you're going to get voted out of office.
And the worst part, I mean, the scientist you're talking about, also from the genetically modified testing he did, he found that he started with the potato and he found it caused severe damage within the rats. It moved on to tomatoes, it became bleeding, BT toxic caused multiple health problems and intestinal problems and developmental problems, and it was developmental and sexual problems. It was like, oh my gosh, the problems that this highly toxic seed that turns into the plant that grows into your fruits and vegetables that's used on your table, that's used in feeding the animals. This is really just horrible stuff.
So coming full circle, Simon, I have a question for you. You read our new book, It's Not Your Fault, about weight gain, food addiction, and obesity. And one of the things we raise in there is the difference between the part of America that refers to all this overweight and overeating and obesity as a behavioral problem and those that see it, in our view, as a chemical addiction to GMOs. And, of course, we cite, you know, in our various books, thousands of references and support what these chemicals do to people. But when you went through all of that, did you find it an interesting debate over whether people are just behaviorally overeating for the first time in history or that it's related to some chemicals?
Oh, I don't think there's any question that it is a chemical dependency. However, I think possibly I would have added a third category, and that would be cultural behavior. I actually went on to the Whole Foods website yesterday, and I haven't had time to do this, but they do have a list of all of their locations, and I noticed that... you know, although they've got a lot of stores, there are many states in the lower 48 that do not have any Whole Foods stores. The state of Mississippi, where I live, is a good example. And that began to, you know, make me wonder if there are, you know, there's chemical dependency. You know, there is obviously this, you know, behavioral idea that's being bandied around. But if there's not that third area where it's some kind of unseen pressure, shall we say, you know, if you live by Monsanto, you know, that Monsanto are your source of profit, your source of livelihood, you're probably going to believe what Monsanto say.
Well, that I think there's some bigger issues. There's some recent surveys printed actually in the last month that touch on this, that, you know, when you look at statistics, we have a friend who does this kind of work, the statistics for hospitals and a variety of other people. And when we talk about, he talks about how states like Nebraska has the highest heart attack rate and other things. And yes, they are states where Monsanto has had its deepest roots. But at the same time, there have been a variety of surveys that have said one in the last few weeks that basically says part of the problem is the way food is prepared. Like in the South, deep frying fried fish, for example, is extremely popular and does it taste good. But if you eat that constantly, yes, that's going to create health problems for a great many Americans. So some of it is cultural in the sense that the food is prepared in a certain style, but even that masks the real problem. It's what they're preparing, because people in the Deep South have been eating fried food for centuries. So why is it all of a sudden that same fried food is now causing them to have heart attacks and die much younger? Gee, could it be they changed the contents? So at some point in here, you know, no matter what they say, it still comes back to the old, what I used to say is garbage in, garbage out, but Ashley corrects me. It's not garbage in, garbage out. It's garbage in that stays in, because once you eat this garbage, it doesn't leave your body. That is the problem.
Which gets to, for me, if you guys don't mind for a moment, the big articles right now, in January 15, 2011, the gastroenterologists all got together and they came to the conclusion that they're saying that obesity inflammation gene is regulated by a gut microbe. Okay, if they're really saying that, and they're saying that this microbe is staying in the body and this particular microbe is what's causing this and it's stimulating your gene, why isn't anybody going to the next phase, which is it's a known fact that these genetically engineered foods actually, as you said, Manny, and as scientists are saying, it crosses this barrier. It gets into the gut. It stays in the gut. Some of the coliform mosaic virus, which they use a lot in this, which is very, very toxic, goes into the blood system. So you have this microbe that's staying there, and instead of testing for the BT toxin and these other toxins that come out of this particular food, which you eat it all day long, that's going to build up in your body. It's only logical. So if they're saying obesity inflammation gene is being caused by this microbe, then I don't understand, other than who is paying the scientist, that they haven't gone to the next spot, gee, let's look at the food that has this in it. Instead, they're saying the next follow-up article had scientists saying, you know, we'll just give people antibiotics for 2 weeks. Well, isn't this how they're doing to the cattle? So they're treating humans like they're treating the cattle in order to handle the inflammation, which is causing obesity.
Okay, and that brings up a question that I've been wanting to ask you for months, actually. I'm not a medical professional, but I keep reading about antibiotics and how certain bacteria or viruses are becoming resistant to antibiotics. Surely if we're pumping antibiotics into animals, isn't the same going to become true, that they become non-useful?
Well, yes and no. First of all, the reasons they do it is these animals die within a short period of time. We're talking about 140 to 180 days. So ultimately, it isn't going to have a radical effect in the animals. What has a big effect are the humans, because traces of it are carried on into humans. So here we are with a situation where humans are already really getting more antibiotics than they should, are now getting small doses of antibiotics in the food they eat. So what does that do? Well, what it does is it basically means that we're conditioning our bodies, so when we really need them, they don't work on us. That's what happens.
Right, and actually that was kind of where I was going. No.
Well, as you said, you're not a doctor, neither am I, but that's the point. And the point is that basically what they're doing is creating a situation where they're contributing to the problem. And it's interesting, because I recall a couple of years ago when there was, and you might recall this too, there were these articles about, oh yes, Don't use too much dish soap, because if you do, the ones that have those microbial antibiotics, because you antibacterials, because you may be contributing to this problem. Okay, I can go with that. But if it's in your food that you eat, aren't you contributing more to the problem that way? That's the way I view it. If you're eating foods with some type of antibiotic in it, your body's going to get used to it, and when you need a serious shot of it, it's not going to work.
For me, one of the best advertising things that these people are doing, and I'm saying these as in big food, big pharma, is that they always say it is your fault. It's your fault that your genes are bad. And look, we just found this gene that's causing this obesity and inflammation. It's your fault. And this is how I liken it. Manny and I were laying in bed the other day, and I said, you know, hon, I'm trying to think of an easy way to explain to people what happens. So I'm going to put it in your house. There's a crack on your wall, okay, or you have a perfect wall, and you have an earthquake. Then there's a crack in the wall. You fix the crack in the wall, and you plaster that crack in the wall. But from that day forward, that crack in the wall is always going to be there. You're going to have another earthquake. That crack in the wall is that one area that's going to be hit. So once you awaken that particular thing, you can put it back in its box, but you have to be careful to never awaken it again or shake it up. And as long as you're putting that crap in your food and your mouth and you can't break it down, you've got these microbes that are staying in your body caused by this genetically engineered food, you're going to get sick. You're going to get fat, you're going to be obese, you're going to have problems. And the obesity comes because your entire system starts to fail. You cannot, they don't go to the next state. They just go, oh, it's the obesity inflammation. They don't say, how about this? It affects your liver. You can't detoxify what's in there. It affects your kidneys. You can't get it out of your body. You can't process it properly. It then affects your pancreas, which means that you're then going to have insulin problems. It's going to cause diabetes. So one thing leads to another, leads to another. And that crack in the wall is always going to be there once you open it. But you can heal it, and you can put a patch on it, and you can fix it. But if you want to stay healthy, you're not going to ever do that again because you don't want to shake that up and destroy or cause problems within those genes.
Okay, I won't say I watch a huge amount of TV, but it seems, you know, TVs seem to be on 24/7 in this house. I see adverts every day for weight loss programs. You know, people are obese. Join Jenny Craig or, you know, join whatever organization. We can help you for the, you know, low price of $10,000 a month. You know, we'll supply you with ready-to-eat meals. Do they work? Is this a sensible strategy for someone that has a weight problem?
Well, let's talk about, there's two aspects. Let's talk about the food itself. And I don't want to pick on any particular one, but I probably will by accident. The fact is, they have the same chemicals as you have in regular food, except they eliminate some of the sugar. And instead of the sugar, they use synthetics. And in some cases, if you look at it, it says low sugar, but it has high fructose corn syrup, and it has the same amount of sugar. So there really is little or no difference between diet food and regular food. In fact, we did a whole list of ingredients on Lean Cuisine and a variety of other ones that have the same. You compare the label Lean Cuisine, let's say a turkey dinner to a Hungry Man or something, same chemicals except for the amounts of sugar. But if you look at the corn solids, high fructose corn syrup, it has basically the same sugar. So basically, the foods don't work. They're misrepresented. And in many instances, they're made by Kellogg's and all these different companies. So if you look at the fine print about who makes it, or you look that food up in the Internet, the Atkins foods, for example, that we cite in our books, Manny's Diet and Enzyme Formula, and I think we do it also, and it's not your fault, yeah. We show that they're made by the same manufacturers who make the other bars. These diet bars, they have more junk in it than a candy bar.
I can't believe I ever ate any of these protein make-me-feel-good bars. Oh, my gosh. When I started looking at the content, it was just, it made me sick to look at them.
Ashley pulled off all of her powdered drinks, those energy drinks, take an energy drink in the morning, some of them with huge comments by doctors how this is the greatest thing since crunchy peanut butter. And you
almost by
it,
an oncologist.
Right, by an oncologist. And you read it, it's high fructose corn syrup, which is corn sugar, and yet it says sugar-free. That means it's cane sugar-free, but it still has sugar beet sugar, and it still has high fructose corn syrup in it. So, yes, most diet foods are a big lie. But let's talk about a separate issue that Americans don't really think about, is that we are split as a country between a belief that weight gain and obesity is behavioral, and as we say, it's addictive chemicals. Ashley one day said to me, honey, you got to look at this show. And it was an Oprah show involving an author who wrote a book called Woman, Food, and God. And they're going on for an hour about how it's your lack of godliness and prayer and all this internal behavioral stuff. Like, you know, if you go to church and pray, you'll get thin.
And wait just a second, because that's what actually spawned. It's not your fault, because Oprah had said, send in your email. And Manny and I looked at each other and we said, we can't answer this in a simple email.
So that's one of the reasons we wrote the book, It's Not Your Fault, to compare these behavioral issues. Well, there's a couple aspects of it that Americans should consider. Why is it a behavioral issue? Well, consider the economics of it. If it's not a behavioral issue, and it really is addiction to the chemicals, and by the way, we give charts of these chemicals, 140 different forms of MSG we list in the book. We list all the fast food makers and what the chemicals are in hamburgers. And I'll go through the ingredients at some point here that are just in simple McDonald's and Wendy's and the rest. But at the end of the day, if they accept this as chemical addiction, then it's a medical problem. Well, the people that you're talking to who go on these weight problems, the doctor says, oh, you got to go on Jenny Craig or Nutrisystem or Weight Watchers, guess what? Those people go home and they have to write a check and pay for it themselves. If this were a chemical addiction, that would become a prescription, and then it would be covered by their health carrier or Medicaid or Medicare. Well, the day our government says that obesity is a chemical addiction, that would include last year $150 billion was spent on obesity. The average American spends over $2,500 a year, if they're obese, more in medical visits than a thin person or a normal weight person. So that means in a decade we would spend over $2 trillion. So if people are upset with Obamacare, if obesity becomes a medical treatment, it would really affect Medicare and Obamacare and the insurance companies. So they have a vested interest, the insurance companies, in not letting obesity become a medical issue. Our government has a vested interest because it doesn't want to pay for the cost of it. And the manufacturers who lobby the government, along with insurance companies, to guarantee that it's not a medical issue. And how do they control this? One way. Doctors will complain, and if you remember the noted authority, Daniel Dantini, who's in Florida, complained about the same thing. As an allergist, he can only bill one way with allergies. He has a variety of sophisticated tests with patents pending that help Americans discover allergies a normal doctor can't do.
This is somebody with 30 years of scientific data to back what he's doing.
Right. So he can't get a Medicare billing number or a Medicaid or an insurance company billing number, so he can't bill for it. So physicians who treat people this way either have to use a different Medicare or insurance code, or they can't bill. So they control it, and one of the reasons that doctors are complaining about all the medicine and all the diagnosis and everything going under a computer program is it's just another government control over what they pay and what they bill. And for those people who complain about government overreaching, this isn't the worst kind of government overreaching. We're down to the argument about the state of Arizona now doesn't pay for certain type of transplants and health things because it costs too much money and people die. Those I can understand. I'm not sure that someone who's an advanced kidney or liver failure, that spending $800,000 on a transplant and a series of other things is necessary in the country's best interest.
Especially
if they're past age 70 and it may only extend their life or two. I don't agree with that, but I can understand why people would argue that. But if you've got a 17, 18-year-old, we had some dinner guests who had a daughter who's basically 150 pounds overweight. She should be getting treated medically. But no, instead they tell her to go on Weight Watchers. Well, she needs a lot more treatment than that. And as I said to her, she needs to give up junk food and fast foods and all the rest. But treating her at 17 to cure her weight issues is productive for society, but it would cost money, and that is something the government doesn't want to pay. And I'm going to come back in a minute and discuss another aspect, but I wonder if that's ever something you've looked at, Simon, in terms of the high cost of medical care for the obese.
Oh, yes, I have. And, I'm horrified by it. You know, we're approaching the problem in all the wrong ways. You're right. Obesity should be, have a medical billing code, if you will. It should be possible to get a prescription, if you will. But obviously, the insurance companies are not in the business of keeping people healthy. They're in the business of keeping their bottom line healthy. And before we go on, I do want to have a quick commercial break here. You've mentioned your book, It's Not Your Fault, several times. I know our listeners want to pick up copies of it. Where can they find it?
Well, the best place is our website, howtoeliminatepain.com. And the reason it's howtoeliminate.com is it'll get away. We discuss how to get rid of the pains of arthritis, all sorts of things, the problems of obesity. All four of our books are available there. Our book on arthritis, gout, inflammation, IBD, IBS, and Crohn's, as well as Manny's Diet and Enzyme Formula. And we also have over 50 articles on the subject that we're talking about, everything covering articles on weight gain, obesity, chemical addiction, the ingredients, all sorts of MSG, you name it. So if you want to research that, listen to it. We also have references there. But our books have over 4,000 references, so if you buy the books, they're also medical reference books. And guess what? Manny's Diet and Enzyme Formula won 2 book awards as the best diet book last year, and our arthritis, inflammation, gout, Crohn's, IBD, and IBS won the best medical reference from 2 different sites. So there are a lot of other people that are taking notice of it. And thank you, Simon. But I want to come back to the second aspect of what we're talking about, okay? And that is, if these foods, particularly the chemicals in the foods, which we're going to come back to, become the issue, then they're going to be treated like tobacco. So if Americans get up and say, gee, you know, we just discovered what we discovered about tobacco, which has 4,000 chemicals and 400 addictive chemicals, that foods now have over 9,000 different chemicals and countless addictive ones, they'll be treated like tobacco. Can you imagine buying a package of, how about Kellogg's cornflakes and having a warning, a Surgeon General warning on it like tobacco, or taxing your cereal because the genetically modified corn causes cancer and other things, and Americans paying taxes like they do in cigarettes. Can you imagine public service announcements saying, if you eat Monsanto's genetically modified corn, your leg may fall off, your stomach will do it. That's what could happen, and then we would have another tobacco situation. And there's a gentleman named Jeffrey Wiegand called The Insider, who they made a movie about, who turned over all the confidential documents of Big Tobacco to 60 Minutes and other people that exposed the truth. Well, one day, someone at Monsanto is going to get sick of this and turn over all this confidential information, and we may have another tobacco situation.
Well, I think Greenpeace sort of did that, Manny, when they forced in Germany the the GMO documents and independent scientific data to be shown, and it's thousands of pages of documents that support everything we're saying. So this isn't something we're just making up. This is actually scientifically proven data.
I know a great many of your listeners may not support Greenpeace, and I don't always either. But the fact is they take on difficult subjects. And one of the things that came out of Monsanto's confidential records was even their records show, their tests show that the MSG had no taste, and that all of these other things involved with the genetically modified corn, the bacteria that get in the human gut, they were all there. They had tests that showed that the bacteria from GMO corn got into the guts of the mice and all the rest of them and killed animals. We've given all sorts of stories and statistics about how in India, an indigenous population of buffalo one day started eating the cotton plants from genetically modified cotton, and within 3 days they were sick. Within 5 days they all died. So they have incidents of animals dying in Germany and all over the world from eating genetically modified corn and other things, which is why France and the European Union banned genetically modified corn, is because it was killing the animals there. Gee, if it's going to kill animals, what's it going to do to all of us?
What has it been doing to all of us? And the fact that they haven't labeled it, they're now starting to label. Many things are now starting to be labeled in the Whole Foods and different places where I'm buying food where it says no GMO, which people are obviously, they're forcing the issue.
So I'm going to give an example. People go, well, what are you really talking about? Hey, there's football games on today. This is playoff weekend for football fans, so there's football parties. So let's talk about some of the things they're going to eat today. Doritos are made with genetically modified corn. That's bad enough. But Doritos have 39 ingredients. It only takes 3 to make corn chips at home. So what are the other 36 ingredients? They're all addictive chemicals to make that fuzzy little red stuff and the chips themselves. So basically, I describe it as a chemical spill. You like Lay's? I won't even take the outrageous Lay's. Let's take regular Lay's. It has 2,800 grams per small bag, okay? 28 grams of salt, okay? More than 180 grams per serving. That's only a couple of chips as a serving. So you take a look at that, and this is from genetically modified potatoes. So if you want to have guacamole, most guacamoles with the word dip that you buy in the store have little, if any, avocado. Dean's guacamole is a big seller. It has less than 2% of guacamole. Of avocado, excuse me. So 2% of avocado in that whole thing, so what's the rest of the green goo? It's a cluster of fillers, chemicals, modified food starch, soybean oil, locust bean gum, and artificial food coloring. In other words, you're eating, something out of your child's green color book, really.
Wait, let's do a moment of a breakdown of what you just said. If you're going to have soybeans, it's going to affect the thyroid, which affects your weight. It's going to block iodine that affects your thyroid, affects your hypothalamus in your brain, eventually will hype the hormones within your brain.
But isn't that because they're genetically modified?
Well, it's because they're genetically modified, but also soybeans do that. That's one of the – it's a very toxic – as we keep saying, only 74 grams a day should be at max. Well, now you're scooping this into your – and it should be broken up because it's so toxic, 4 doses throughout the day according to the FDA. So then you also have an artificial food coloring. Artificial food colorings have been banned – certain ones have been banned by the FDA, but – the big food went in and said, you know what, we have all these warehouses of coloring. What are we going to do with it? We're going to lose millions of dollars.
I mean, why are they bad? What is it about the food coloring?
Because it causes cancer. So you're now having a deliciously green goo thing that you're shoving these corn chips in that are full of genetically engineered coloring also, that's filled with cancer, that's filled with things that are affecting your thyroid, that are filled with a modified food starch, which means it has MSG, which means it's also attacking the hypothalamus in your brain, where that part of your brain is actually going to be part of what makes your appetite want to eat more and more and more and more, also throws off the whole balance of your body, throws your pH off. So by the time you get done with this fabulous game and this bowl of chips with this goo, you are actually have caused your body to be inflamed, and you're going to want more. It's going to trick your body into thinking it tastes so great because it's a trick. Tricks that excitotoxin, tricks that brain, and you're going to want more of it, and then you're going to go buy and eat more of it.
So the bottom
Manny,
line
you,
is you, Manny,
you mentioned the list of ingredients. You forgot the vital one, natural flavorings. I'm sure it's on there.
Well, there's nothing natural about natural flavoring. It's the same as artificial flavoring and artificial food coloring. How they got away with putting natural on it is totally beyond me because they're done in a lab. There's a wonderful book called Fast Food Nation by Eric Schlosser, which just absolutely exposes the industry, allowed him to tour their plants and explained all this to them. And as he wrote in the book, there's no difference between the two. And that's one of the major problems. And the moral of this story is don't skip guacamole. Go buy fresh avocados and make it yourself, and you'll save yourself 64 different ingredients and an inflamed stomach. And for those who bring home burgers and stuff, a Wendy's Baconator has 3,100 grams of salt, 20 grams of sugar. It has maybe 60 different chemical ingredients in it. That's not a hamburger. That's an oil slick.
Okay, and they're saying at max, by the Heart Association says maximum you shouldn't have more than 2,100 grams of salt a day.
No, the Heart Association
1,600, you're right.
1,600, and the RDA, the ridiculous daily allowance, is 2,500, which was decided by the industry, not an independent board.
Same with the sugar. The M&Ms who funded and a lot of the other companies from the big food who fund the RDA have this. They can't even tell you how many grams of sugar. But the thing is, medically, 3,180 grams of salt. Now, what you do is that electrolytes are now thrown off, which means that you're going to increase your potassium, which means essentially if you ate that many grams of salt 3 to 4 times a day, you could give yourself a heart attack.
Yeah, and for those who go, oh, I don't eat Wendy's, I like a Big Mac. Well, that has 69 ingredients, 1,880 milligrams of salt, and 56 grams of sugar. It has soy extract, and by the way, the hamburger, it's ammonia in it because they're so afraid of giving someone E. coli in a fast food restaurant, they now put ammonia into the hamburger to kill the E. coli. And if you're going to order fries, I mean, a McDonald's fries have over 400 milligrams of salt, 112 grams of sugar. Why are you putting sugar on French fries? High fructose corn syrup on fries.
112 grams of sugar. This means if you ate a Big Mac and a McDonald's and the next day you got up and had your blood test done, even if you fasted all night, you're going to be classified as a diabetic. Because your insulin is going to pump, 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 pump out of that pancreas trying to handle and help your body. What you're doing to your poor body is horrible.
And that's why there's so many teenagers being considered diabetics. And by the way, let's not give them a pass. McDonald's fries has salt in 46 different ingredients. Whatever happened to cutting up fresh potatoes, throwing them into some oil, and making French fries? I always tell the story. I grew up in Los Angeles, and the third McDonald's was in my neighborhood in the early 50s. So my generation ate a lot of McDonald's. I had a year in college. I was so broke, I ate McDonald's for lunch and dinner, surviving around the house by the college because I couldn't afford to eat. But I didn't get fat, and I didn't get sick. Well, at some point, McDonald's stopped using organic ingredients and started going chemical like everybody else. So at the end of the day, McDonald's became unsafe. And that's true of all the rest. Wendy's, all the rest of them at one time were organic. In fact, the truth is that the human race was organic until the last 20 to 30 years when chemicals started. Over 20,000 chemicals have been invented and patented since World War II, and over 14,000 of them have been put into our food source. And that is the element of the problem that Americans have in eating. So what we're dealing with here today, we started out with an industry The nose that's lying to the American public, that's manipulating using all the powers of major corporation. So now they're picking on us because they're afraid we're spreading the truth, but they pick on everybody else too. We're not alone because they're making so much money off of, I mean, think about this. This guacamole has got 2% of avocado and the rest is chemicals. How much money do you think they're making off this chemical substitute? And Simon, you may remember Party Time. Remember when we were talking about partying at Halloween and having strawberry margaritas, and I read the Party Time label? And it was high fructose corn syrup, natural flavor, and food coloring. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with this? There's no strawberry in it. It looks red, so they call it strawberry, but it's just basically high fructose corn syrup and chemicals. So here's this quart bottle selling for a real steel was on sale for like $2.50. It probably costs 3 cents to make. I'd venture to guess that bottle and label and box cost more than the chemicals in it, and the cost of shipping it was more than the chemicals.
And to make it look strawberry, it had a red dye. It had the red dye that causes cancer. And the entire contents, geez, I will never drink ever a margarita that is not made in my own home.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's true with drinks very quickly. If you have a typical strawberry milkshake at Burger King or one of the fast food places, that has 50 ingredients. I mean, I can make one at home with 2 or 3 ingredients. Even simple things like this new Arizona Southern Style sweet tea that's a popular change of pace. You see it in every liquor store, every convenience store, that has over 40 milligrams of salt and 112 grams of sugar. And Coca-Cola has basically 40 grams of sugar they list, but they have another 40 grams of sugar and high fructose corn syrup. So a Big Gulp that's 30 ounces has about 100 grams of sugar in it. So if you go have a Big Gulp and a burger, then you're having about 300 grams of sugar, you know, about 3,000 grams of salt. So if you have that 2 or 3 times a day, you're having 10,000 milligrams of salt, 600 or 700 grams of sugar, and you wonder why young children and teenagers are obese. Ladies and gentlemen, please read our book. It's Not Your Fault. Find out if you have weight gain problems and you're obese, or you feel you're addicted to food and you drool and all you want is a fast food burger, find out the truth, because you're being treated the same way tobacco treated Americans for all those years. And I'm sure they're laughing behind your back all the way to the bank.
And for me,
I understand the, you know, grams and stuff, but lots of people don't really understand, you know, what 100 grams or 1,000 grams of something is. In the case you cited, you know, how many tablespoons or, you know, how big a pile of sugar are we talking about?
Well, you know, when you talk about 200 grams of sugar, you're talking about 400 teaspoons, basically, maybe, or tablespoons. I mean, a huge amount of stuff. And another way, you're talking about, I'll give an example, with the 200 grams of sugar. Or let's take Coca-Cola. It's a 12-ounce can. It's got basically 80 grams, which is, what, 4 ounces, okay? 3 or 4 ounces. So 3 ounces, let's say. So a 12-ounce can, 1/4 of that can is sugar. Is that put in graphic enough terms, Simon?
Yeah, I think so. It's just that people don't really understand numbers. They, you know, that they work so much better with something that's visible.
Well, I agree. Well, you take a Baconator, which has got 3,100 grams of sugar. There's 20
grams of salt.
Grams of salt, excuse me. There's 20 grams per ounce. So you figure that out. That's about 100, what is it, 100 ounces of, no, it couldn't be. It's less than that. It's it breaks down. It's basically about 2 or 3 ounces of salt. They, you know, they just spread so much salt, because you have to remember the salt comes in the burger prepared, it comes mixed up in the sauces they put on it, it comes the salt's in the bun, it's in every single thing, not just, people think, oh, they just dump the salt on it while they're cooking it. No, the salt goes into every single separate ingredient that makes it. The Big Mac, that secret sauce that nobody knows what it is, it's probably a good thing we don't know what's in it. People would go crazy.
And if you took a cup right now in your kitchen and you poured 2 to 3 ounces, there's a marker on it that'll say 2 to 3 ounces, and pour water in it. Just pour water in it, and you'll know how much salt you've taken in. And then the next day, if you go to see the doctor, you will be labeled a diabetic. It's in the food. It's what's chemically changing your body. It's what's making you gain weight. It affects your metabolism, and it will make you sick.
And with this, I'm going to end with this thought. We offer a 90-day and a 60-day challenge in our book. If you quit eating these foods for 60 to 90 days and see how your body changes, how you stop drooling, how you stop eating between meals without thinking about it, how your portions are dropped because you really don't, you're not hungry anymore, it's the same way as people who quit tobacco. And if you quit for 3 or 4 months, and go back and have a McDonald's or another fast food burger, you'll go, oh, this tastes terrible.
It stinks. I can't get over the smell difference
to
me.
Yeah, it's just like somebody who hasn't smoked a cigarette in a year, and they either light one up or they're in a room with a bunch of cigarette smokers and they want to throw up. So once you give this up and you get it spaced away from it, you'll realize just how chemically addictive this food is.
And I
hate to do this, but I'm being whined at in my ear. Once again, another 90 minutes has just whizzed by. Manny and Ashley, I really want to thank you for taking time out to talk with us today. And I think you've provided a great deal of food for thought. Excuse the pun.
Well, at least it isn't feet for those sports fans who understand that joke. So anyway, I hope everybody enjoys the playoff games. Hope everybody has a very happy New Year, and thank you, Simon.
Thank you, Simon, and thank you to all the listeners, and I wish you much health.
And I'm sure we will all be back next Saturday, same bat time, same bat channel. Until then, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a great and healthy weekend. Till next time, goodbye.
Goodbye.